This is Tim McHenry, producer of the Rubin Museum of Art, and you are listening to the Red Book Dialogues on WNYC's Talk to Me series.
Hello.
Hi.
So I have one or two comments that might orient our discussion. If they don't, then we can just ignore them. To me, one of the beautiful things that Jung does that's quite unique is he explored the connection between who we are as individuals, who we are personally, and what the impact on us of the collective has been, how that shapes us or reshape it. It's a very complex interaction, and it has to do with our relationships, of course, to all different levels of our collective identity. He starts with the inner fire or the spark that's just only us, and then continues to look at layers of collectivity all the way out to the instinctual or animal. Somewhere in there is the cultural, the stuff that we all share, whether it's images or language. Amongst those things, some things will strike us as important. For Jung, those things are indicative of something, an image on the inside of us that needs attention. And with that realization, our personal journeys, our personal investigation begins. The other thing that's incredibly unique about Jung is that Jung treats all, let's call them symptoms, all problematic psychological states as opportunities, in the sense that in the shape of the symptom itself is the symbolic solution, if you can get it translated and then live it in your life. So without glossing over the terrible struggles that people have, it's incredibly forward-looking and constructive. In Jung's view, artists are able to look at the pieces of their psyches as autonomous, and that's where characters in plays or in television series come from, and that's why they're so interesting to us. And in fact, the popular artistic motifs of whatever kind of genre hit us at a collective level, and you can just tell that they do that because they're popular. Of course, popularity has a dark side as well that's, let's say, represented by any kind of ideology, including, let's say, advertising, which is also related.
I've done what I can to limit our popularity.
Not according to the Golden Globes. Now, the Red Book is very important in this because Jung took his own fantasies as completely autonomous and let them run through him, recorded them, then stepped back and thought, what are the structures here? If this was something that I found instead of apparently made, what would it mean? And then he made images to go along with them. And these are the images, one of the images we'll be looking at today. So the bottom line for all of that, for all of us, is the question of what is our subjectivity made of? For all of you, what's your personal process at the most personal level? And then how to connect that with other levels of the collective, and then how to live what you find. So that's my little spiel. We can come back to that or not. Here's the folio. Drum roll, please.
All I heard was blah, blah. No.
That's what my wife said.
Wow. Do you ask me questions? Do I describe this?
Do what you like, sir.
It's not made me feel any less anxious, I can tell you that.
What about it?
Well, for one thing, is everybody looking at the images?
Yeah, it's right behind us.
Can you believe this? I don't know if that's a man or a cat, and their feet are not really on the floor. They're almost like tails. And the room is definitely a very limited space. It has a feeling like the tarot, like the magician. But it's very brown. And that figure is not welcoming. That's not a friendly figure for me. And the circle at the end looks like a secret door that you could press on and maybe Maybe there's a panel somewhere in this room to open that up, like Star Trek, it would slide open.
You would hope.
And the hat and the garments are ethnic, I would say. I don't know if they're, I don't know what it says about me, but they do look somewhere between a magician, performer, maybe medieval scientist. But they're definitely theatrical. And they're like, or maybe they're doctor's garments. And I don't know if the, he seems like he's barely holding onto the floor. There's not much to stand on.
Yeah, there's something a little surreal about it, right?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I was counting on that no matter what. I'm a little unsettled by this image, and yeah. I find it to be very dark, and I find the character either to be trapped or standing in my way to get out that door.
Mm-hmm. There's a little text that goes along with it. Is that on your...
Yeah, but yeah, it's not
it's
in
not
English.
In the image. Up here, the text says, the fabric of the shadow of God. Not that that will lighten your mood.
No, it's... No, it's interesting because it's so otherworldly, and it's such a creature. And I said those vestments are definitely—I was going to say, like almost like an Orthodox Jew or something.
Yeah,
they feel very carnival-like or something, some kind of shadowy figure.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again. What is it?
The fabric of the shadow of God.
Shadow of God. Well, you're definitely, it's interesting, because you're definitely looking at something and you can't really see it.
Yeah.
I really feel like this is an antechamber.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't want to look through that hole. You might be afraid, this might be some kind of protective room to look at God itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, the fabric part is obviously, I don't have to hide what a fetishist I am. The fabric, is it literally mean like a fabric, or does it mean something different in German?
Well, it's the same as our idea that there can be a fabric of the universe or a fabric of...
Of cloth.
Of cloth, yeah.
So it's some kind of vestment.
It's a vestment or a kind of underlying texture, yeah.
Well, how can you have... So it's already a mind bender that there's a fabric of a shadow.
And not to mention the shadow of God.
Yeah. It's, you put God on the end of anything. It's like a fortune cookie. I mean, I have my emotional response to this is it's not bleakness, it's more like foreboding.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like I would say that bringing my education into this, I really don't want to. Oh, look at all the red in his eyes. I didn't even notice that. And that's not a person, that is a cat or cat like person. There's whiskers and a bloody mouth, and the eyes are red. But this feels like some kind of sacred space. But, you know, you expect it to be filled with light and gold and so forth. But I think it's, with the exception of the fact that it has the same floor that I have in a galley kitchen on the Upper East Side, it feels like an entrance. It's a room of preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Where there is, but this person doesn't feel like they're there to guide you. And this character doesn't feel like it's me either. I think this is someone there who is either guarding it or who is not being allowed to enter, who's like the person in line in front of you.
You said it seemed kind of enclosed as well, right?
It feels completely enclosed.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it doesn't hurt that if the figure was in the center, they would have a presence of, mm-hmm, like being the owner of the space. But I think being off in the corner like that and this the perspective that you're looking at, it feels like you are, you know, it's a jetway. Basically, and you are on your way to some whatever's behind that door, and this character is I think this character is a guard, like at the Vatican. That's what it looks like.
Mm.
Like, what are they, the Knights of Saint Peter? What are they?
Swiss Guards.
Swiss Guards, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially the red socks. Fabric, the shadow of the fabric of God. Are we sure that goes with this picture? It's almost like being in a room that's a device to look at whatever's through that hole. Because,
mm-hmm,
I think that hole is what's on the other side of there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so much darker than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's dark. And one of the questions is, what would it be like to come up against this kind of figure in this kind of setting and know that it was either part of your process or an image of a part of you.
I to see that as myself waiting there, I don't know, because of the intensity of the perspective on the drawing, I immediately felt like I was coming towards it. Hmm. And you know, you have this feeling in dreams, at least I do, where you do see yourself in the dreams, obviously. And that could be me there. But my initial response is, I'm walking down this pathway and this figure is there. But also my dreams are kind of characterized by obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
Because life is lacking in them.
Yeah. No obstacles.
Yeah. And sorry, what was the question? Is it like, no, I mean, I sort of see like this character is not friendly. I'm not a cat person. I'm a dog person. I mean, I like cats, but I don't look to them for guidance. And anything that appears to be human but isn't is already quite honestly terrifying to me.
Right, right. Like the Egyptian kind of gods?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It always feels like it's some violence towards a human figure. Mm-hmm. It always feels like it's the aftermath of some kind of accident. It's the transformation. Mm-hmm. A transformation that's not for the good, even in cat people. But to feel like that's myself, then I feel like I'm waiting, and maybe I'm afraid to turn around and look, or I'm not going to get a chance to go through that door. I'm just going to have to sit leaning in this corner. But I actually feel more strongly that it's that I'm walking towards this, and this creature here is ahead of me in line.
Hmm.
And not communicative. And
yeah, not conversational.
Not conversational.
No.
And I just had the sensation that I suppose that I realize when I get there that I am one of these also.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'm one of these also, and then I see it, and I don't like looking at it, and I'm going to have to stand there behind it, and I wish it would turn around and wait in the line in a dignified way.
Cue up.
Yeah, I mean, as you look at these, more details arise. The tile work, and it's definitely supposed to be tile work as far as I'm concerned, it's earthen, and it's some kind of, I'm sure it's watercolor or something, but it's definitely different on that back wall. And the circle, the focus, the target of it is, the more I look at it, the more soft that wall seems in the back. It doesn't have the grout. It doesn't mm-hmm. have the joints.
Like it's receding or something.
Yeah. I start to feel that maybe it's a space in itself and that the door is actually open. And I just noticed that.
Hmm.
And I think that that's part of what was unsettling about the sort of floating quality of the garments and the foot being off the ground is that maybe this is like, I kept thinking it was a vapor lock or something, you know, which is not something Jung's going to know about, but but he knows about processionals, and he knows about palaces.
Antechambers.
Yeah. And I wonder if that door is actually open, and that circle is an expression of, is actually something physically there,
mm-hmm.
or if it's like a lot of things are, like drawings or whatever, that it's a representation of what's on the other side.
Hmm.
And the circle part of it and that target and that empty hole in the middle is, as my friend would say, on the good-bad scale, I don't feel that good about it. But I maybe, you know,
well,
it could be soft.
It's interesting you mentioned the dreams. A lot of times in dreams, if the image of a prison or a place that we are put against our will comes up, it's usually the beginning of understanding our own limitations.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which, you know, in terms of...
A recurring dream, which people who work with me and know me, and I know other people who have this, of ending up in prison. It's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually starts with being on the run for something that is irreversible that I did. I don't even know what it is. And then getting caught, and then getting incarcerated, and then being in bars and feeling this incredible sense of regret about having to be there forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that means what?
Well, let me leave that for your own process, but let's, you know, but let's push the, you know, the limit thing
hungry.
And confinement thing. You know, you mentioned that this seemed limited at first, or like it was a limiting space, but then also maybe like it was a door. And the question is, to what extent are our limitations, or when we come up against a limitation, to what extent is that from another perspective are part of our path.
Well, I believe that I don't really believe in limitations. I think they're external, obviously, but I think that they're often a tool of the external world, and sometimes parents. And there are real limitations, obviously. You know, you start to find out what the substance of yourself is. I wanted to be an actor. Yeah. I realized I couldn't be a leading
that's
man.
That's absolutely the reality of your actual
limitations.
Because limitations and who you are the same thing from different angles.
But I have had, as a lot of people do, a complete misinterpretation of what my limitations were. I have exceeded, I think, the sense of who I was. Mm-hmm. I exceeded. Mm-hmm. Which made me feel differently about limitations. Mm-hmm. That maybe they were just a comfort to rest on when I failed. Well, that's just my limitation.
Yeah. Well, that's why also in dream work, a lot of times some kind of prison thing, which is something about limitations, ends up being the beginning of a very creative process.
Right.
Because when we know the edges, then you can do something about it.
Well, this is definitely an entrance to me. Yeah. It's not a dark alley that was my first sensation, mm-hmm. I have to say that. The thing that actually scared me about it was this feeling that I had gone down an alley and there was a creature at the end of the alley.
Mm.
And that I was going to, and the creature is not friendly, but the creature is kind of, it feels like, I don't know if it's the clothing or whatever, the creature has a feeling of a bureaucrat to me. It's, you know what I mean? It's not, I don't feel menace.
Mm-hmm.
I feel someone, that there's someone there is either waiting in line or doing their job. Which may be me, I don't know. But I definitely was scared at first, along what you're saying, of the fact that it didn't go anywhere and then realized that it was a door. But that may just because if it's a door, it's obviously magical. And that there's something about the shadow. It makes me think that whatever you're going to get it to look at is not the actual thing.
Hmm.
And I feel a slight sense, as ominous as I feel, there's almost a kind of blandness. Maybe it's the earthiness, or maybe it's the word shadow, that even if it's God, that you're not going to be looking at what you actually want to see.
Right. Right. I mean, the idea of God having a shadow is pretty striking, too.
Yes.
Especially if it's a sort of personal idea of what's the highest. How, you know, that having a dark side can be quite a shocker.
Oh, the shadow being the dark side of God. Yeah. I took it much more literally. I just thought, like, what is the light source that is behind God that is creating a shadow? And how big must that be?
So you're shooting the scene already.
No, you know, yeah. It's going to cost too much money. We're not going to be able to do it.
No limitations.
Well, it's funny because, to me, I have these images sometimes, and they're about revelation. And I think that's a lot of what this is to me, is like this expectation, almost like a story being told, of cranking something up and something opening up and that pleasure of seeing something. And it's not just because of the financial limitations of what I work in or anything like that, but I often feel like the scale of what I'm looking at is so gigantic that I can only see a piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were standing, I can't imagine looking at God, but I could imagine standing at the theoretical feet or seeing the shadow cast by it or mm-hmm. seeing the eclipse, you know, mm-hmm. and knowing that you can't look at it, but you're in the air of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more awesome because it's so incredibly big.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep wondering about the word, about why, it was a joke, but why you would throw God into this picture.
Partly because of the idea of what it is to be a collective group or entity. You know, Jung uses God in a whole bunch of different ways, but there's something essential in each person that we often think of as connected to something higher than us, something divine.
Right.
And then there are also things that sweep through crowds of people
mm-hmm.
that either they worship or follow or something. Either, you know, it can be something that we identify with as a country or a religion or a people. And a lot of times that manifestation can have a dark
Or hysteria.
Hysteria. We were talking about the Crusades before. Yeah. And, you know, that's
how
a very...
whip people up.
Yeah, and they're, you know, hardly a better example of the shadow of God.
And, well, you know,
could be found.
People always talk about TV and its influence or entertainment. And you just think, like, they really, in a pre-literate society, with a few speeches and stained glass windows...
Here you go.
...got people to do a lot of things. And they threatened to kill a lot of them, too.
Yeah.
They were good at that, too.
The guys with the swords were important. Yeah.
But it's interesting that you say that, because... Can you translate it for me one more time? What is it? Standing?
The fabric of the shadow of God.
The fabric of the shadow of God.
Which is about too many factors for me to really process.
Yeah, it's a thing that is and it isn't.
Yeah.
But this is such a clearly defined space.
Yeah.
This is a doorman. And I wonder if it's like an elevator now.
Yeah, going up or down.
Yeah. Would that be part of his world? When was this done?
It wouldn't be in terms of his lived life particularly. I mean, it was done in the 20s. But, conveyances to go, you know, up to heaven, down to hell,
right,
is usually how it goes. Were certainly, those have been there for thousands of years and were in all the alchemical images that he was exploring. So that kind of thing is certainly possible.
It's definitely looking now less like a... I could imagine it. Again, I think it has to do with that floor, which I recognize from apartment buildings, which is not where Jung is, but...
Well, and the doorman thing is interesting because that's the person that lets you in or not.
Well, that's where I think that came to me from.
Yeah.
I think that this is an official creature designed to... And not a particularly pleasant creature, but it's not a terrifying guard. It's one of those weird, half male, half female, like guides. And I don't think it's particularly intelligent, because I think it's like an animal, that it's some kind of instinct, and it's standing upright, which makes it even. It looks like a human, but it's not. I'm dying to know what's on the other side of that door. And he cheated by giving it this title, because it makes me think there's something amazing out there, and this is such a dismal waiting room.
Well, and if this was a guardian of the threshold kind of thing, if you knew it was a part of you or a thing to assimilate about yourself, where would that go? I mean, sometimes we find out things about ourselves that we really wish weren't true.
I'll be honest with you. I feel a tremendous sense of disappointment.
Hmm.
And I do feel a limitation in the sense that this is such a drab, bureaucratic, Soviet, pedestrian space. And that I am not, it is a limitation. I can't get through that into that room.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm stuck in this bullshit. And it has, the only reflection I can say that it has on me is that makes me afraid.
Mm-hmm. Would that characterize, let's say, I don't know if you've ever had experiences of being stuck in a creative process or some other process, would any of those adjectives apply, kind of drab or whatever Soviet means? Or
Soviet's just a limit in the design imagination, which is...
But it's also an ideological...
It's part of the masses. It's literally like... I mean, honestly, that's what it feels like. It's like, what if I think that I'm going someplace and I'm not even close and I'm probably not even going to get in? And creatively, yeah. But the creative part of it is like, it's worse after the completion. And... The strange thing for me is that I have, as many creative people do, zero relationship with my work when it's finished.
Hmm.
I would like to have a relationship with it, but something about me makes me look at it and think in the worst possible way that someone else did it. And that is, there's zero satisfaction. There's tremendous satisfaction in the process, and there's a lot of self-congratulations in finishing things.
Hmm.
And occasionally... especially because of the feedback that I get when I feel that I have had a genuine interaction with other human beings and expressed myself and been heard or got, you know, on the best of days, understood. And it's not just me that there's a commonality, that there is a part of the collective. But then I think that this, in a weird way, feels like that I'm in a room that I think is the end of things, and I'm not even close to where I'm supposed to be. And
because of how alien the figure is,
the alien the figure is, and also that the figure is that it's pretty pedestrian.
Yeah.
I'm going to be staying in the pedestrian space no matter where I thought. I went all the way down the hallway, and I'm stuck there with, you know, got my...
Soviet-era kitsch or something.
Yeah, no, I'm, you know, it's the boring part of the castle. it's a servant's entrance.
Yeah, you find your way to the pantry.
Yeah, but it's funny because it's hard to look at any door. I'm kind of interested in doors. It's all over the show, and it's all over a lot of my work. And it's, I mean, anybody who does drama, it's like one of the greatest things in the world. Anybody who's seen Star Trek knows what kind of door this is. It's going to go that way. and I have a lot of childhood recollections of doors. I was just talking to somebody about this, being on the other side of them, being punished. Being alone in my room, the lock.
So that was doors as enclosing.
Doors as enclosing, and what's on the other side? Freedom, other people. We had a finished basement when I was young, and we would have to go downstairs when the kitchen and the house was being cleaned, and we would sit on these carpeted stairs and look through the crack and see my mother cleaning the floors, and eventually not cleaning the floors, but the door was locked. And I think she just wanted to be by herself, but it's an hour and it's a long time down there. And I knew when that door opened, it would literally be daylight. It'd be, and I feel that all the time, that you get privacy when you close a door. You get turned on when you close a door. And then you open the door and it's just, it's instant drama. A door is instant drama because you don't know what's there. And even if you do, something's going to change. And one of the things I feel the most for myself is, especially getting out of my car or coming out of the men's room or coming out of my bedroom, whatever, is when I open that. In my home, the doors are open everywhere, all the time. But when I am in public and I open the door, I am one person on one side of it and another on as soon as I go outside.
Yeah.
And the who am I comes up immediately. You know, I can tell you one thing is that I think that you will smile when you open this door, but you won't be forced to smile because you'll be looking at something else. You won't be being looked at. Does that make sense? I have a strange experience. I remember learning about this in college. It was a regular poetry class, but the woman who taught it was a feminist intellectual, and she talked about this power that the men walk down the street and they look at a woman and a woman must smile. And I feel like that. I feel like I must smile. I've always felt that way.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that could be your parents, that could be anything. There's also just the dramatic structure for me of my life, of you go through the dark place and you hope that there's light on the other side.
Yeah.
And a lot of waiting rooms, a lot of waiting, which is what I associate with this. I don't feel any sense of power. That's the part that feels drab to me, is the waiting. We spend so much of our life waiting, and it's paralyzing. You cannot do anything. And I don't care who you are, whatever you think you're doing when you whip out your phone, you're not doing anything. You're doing nothing. You're opening a door that goes to nowhere, a door you've been in a million times, and there's nothing there. Even if you call your friends or whatever, it's like...
So with some doors, you're different.
I don't think
side.
It's a door. I think it's a fake door. I think it's like a toy.
Right.
It's like kids playing with a spatula and a fake kitchen.
So some doors you're the same, then. Some doors you go through and you're just the same.
I think some doors you go through and you're the same, and that's a comfort, but I think when you go down this important, this is a palatial door, or Maybe it's in this tile and everything. It could be in the basement. It could be in the bowels of the castle. You could be going into the dungeon, I guess. But I have a feeling that whatever this is, that on the other side of this, especially because of this fabric of God thing, is something, the shadow that you can't touch or whatever, that you're going to wait in this place. And this character is not confrontational. I think it has a lot to do with it being off-center and leaning against the wall. It's not, that character is a guard, is just doing their job. Mm-hmm. I really do believe that.
Just there.
Yeah. And that you're going to go through that, and you are going to smile because there's something amazing over there, but you're going to have to wait.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a huge difference, smiling because you're looked at, so it's a kind of a social code.
Right.
Right? And Jacques Lacan talks about the gaze, in which you're defined right. by how you're seeing people seeing you.
I did a lot on the show about the gaze. I'm fascinated with this.
Versus looking out and having that be...
If it comes from inside,
right?
You know, I saw this movie about 8 years ago called Shaolin Soccer, which was a Chinese movie, and the guy who does it, Stephen Chow, I think is his name, and I watched it with my kids with the subtitles, and they were laughing. And I was like, how amazing is it that this man can make you laugh in Chinese? You know? I hope there's something amazing over there, but I have to say this is not a place I want to wait. I think there's everything but, like, ground out cigarette butts on that floor.
Yeah, it looks like it.
What do you think it is?
Turning the table.
It's not cheating.
Well, no, I agree.
There's no right answer.
There's something limiting about it, and there's something about when we see what those edges are, then we have the possibility of moving on, of changing it. And there's something here confronting one which is not human. And I don't know if it's subhuman or superhuman. But wow. So I think it's an aspect of ourselves that's not what we expect.
That's amazing. Superhuman. The whole thing turns blue to me all of a sudden. It's not brown anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Some aspect of ourselves that we... I can't help but be literal about it. I feel like when I turn it towards myself, if I literally even... I mean, it's an optical illusion, especially if you take the floor out, you can literally see it coming at you.
Oh, you can put it the other way, yeah.
And that means that character is right up in your face or floating in whatever is back there.
Right, it could be the top of a pyramid almost, looking down.
Yeah. I feel like the part of myself that I see is the part that is obsessed. I know you're not allowed to use that word because it's medical, but the part that is extremely, extremely interested.
At all times.
In anticipation. Mm-hmm. And it's what I like about drama, and it's sometimes what I create in my life, and it's always about the unknown. And sometimes it's foreboding.
Mm-hmm.
And when I have dreams of going through sacred spaces, you know, it's always about coming down this dark hallway out into the light.
Mm.
It's the ceiling that's low, and then no ceiling at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a part of myself that is very interested in the mundane. And how do you deal with the mundane? Because everything is not that light on the other side of that door. And wouldn't it be nice if you are waiting in the world's worst lobby, if there was this superhuman creature there with some indication, some tease about the fact that there's something amazing on the other side of that door.
Right.
Now I want to talk to that creature, find out. I probably, that's the other part of myself. I've completely judged this thing to death.
What would you say?
I get so much of my work from eavesdropping and from having conversations. Now, not so much under the guise of anonymity as I used to, but people talk to me. And it's a gift.
Mm.
I know it's a gift. And now I am often the repository of people's pain because of that, because of the show.
Yeah.
Because I've exposed myself. But I have an instinctive interpretation of people that I think is right most of the time, that's about danger versus not danger. And that's the only way I classified this creature, because I felt the situation was immediately kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get past that, you start wondering, well, this person, this creature must have the same feelings that I do. And in fact, anything that they don't have that's different is going to be fascinating to me. And then sometimes they're just, there's nothing.
Well, it's interesting that you had that take, and it's a cat kind of figure, not a dog figure, which might be more familiar.
Right.
So there might be something in the cat area that needs attention. I don't know why that got a laugh.
Because you know what? They're around us everywhere, and we know that they are meaningful, but they're also so silly and stupid, and we project every kind of personality onto them, and they're unknowable. Cats are unknowable, and they don't give a shit about you. It's a terrible thing. They don't give a shit about their young. You really find rarely find, and I like cats more than dogs. I'm allergic to them, but dogs don't seem as smart to me, and therefore they're not as good. No, I don't have the rapport that I have with cats.
Yep.
But with cats, I feel like it's a very mysterious thing. A cat is, you cannot know
it's mysterious.
A cat. And
cats and dogs are the two animals that are domesticated that we live with.
Right,
which is a sort of odd thing, but they're very different.
And cats have this mystical, unknowable quality, and dogs have this completely familiar, exposed quality.
Right.
And one of them gives you unconditional love. They jump up, you know, when people are dead, they know, you know, because they're so attuned to us.
Yep.
And we're so sure, we're so secure in our relationship with them. And cats, you're dreaming if you think you have a relationship with a cat.
Well, it's funny because
when you die and your cat's in your apartment, the cat will eat you. It's been proven. They will. Dogs, not so much.
Well, it's amazing because you're right on top of how those animals are seen in dreams. I mean, you know, the cat is about something mysterious and about something which we project onto. Dogs are something familial, loyal, connected.
And yet I'm more interested in cats and feel more connection with them. I think there are so many universal symbols of mystery in this, including the sentence, which is gigantic. The sentence is gigantic. You're right. He's thrown three things in there. It's literally like abyss, you know, whatever, universe.
Ultimate.
Yeah. And, you know, once I get past the good or bad judgment of this creature, I start to see now maybe it's more of a guide. And what does that tell you about me, that I walked into this room, thought this was some meaningless creature that was in my way or ahead of me in line, and who knows, this could have been my guide.
Right.
This might be the thing that I have to talk to get the door open.
Exactly.
Why was I so shitty to him in line?
You're going to have to really be nice now. Well, that's just what Jung came up
against.
You
have the king?
Yeah. Couldn't you be a dog?
Yeah, I know.
Jung came up against exactly that. You know, these images came up in his mind, and he was a scientific psychologist, and he thought, this is absurd. But now it's demanding that I have a relationship with it.
It is. The creature is demanding, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's weird, because you don't think of it blocking it. Now I think about myself, and I'd say I would have pushed this thing out of the way and pressed every square in this room to get this door open, because I can get us out of here, and I can get that door open. And that creature probably knows exactly what it is, and I didn't even...
Right.
That's a limitation. Is the inability to see value, especially in another creature.
Yeah.
That someone else can, or some other thing can solve a problem.
Especially an unappealing looking one.
I don't know if it's unappealing. It definitely is unassuming.
Unassuming.
You know? Because it has an official capacity, but I have a distrust of all official stuff. I have a problem with authority, and this looks like a representative of an authority. And therefore, I think this is the creature that I'm going to have to I'm going to show them my papers, and they're going to send me back to window 4.
It's sort of Kafka-esque kind of
yeah,
authority.
Yeah, but the fact that I now that I look at it and what we're talking about, it seems now more that there is this could be the key, and maybe this is something more wizard-like. I mean, it's floating. How could I take that for granted, right? Those are feet, too.
Feet or socks or something.
Socks.
Yeah.
Well, one of them looks like one of those Arabic sultan shoes. Yeah. The other one looks like it might be a tail. But... Or transforming into a tail, or transforming from a tail into a foot. I feel like I went into this room, and this is something about me for sure, is that I looked at the architecture and ignored the person.
Mm.
And probably, though, in fairness to me, because I'm afraid of the person.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole relationship with authority and knights and emissaries and clerks is fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's someone who immediately, through no earned position, has authority over you.
Yeah.
I'm part of the collective. I will give my authority over, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to visit certain places of worship or be around certain kinds of fringe or less traditional religions because my wife will not allow me near them because I can be converted very easily. On the other hand, anything that actually does smack of, especially a uniform, I have...
Not so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have contempt.
So people in their functionary role is part of it.
I'm just doing my job is one of the most infuriating things you can say to me.
Yeah.
And I immediately think, as many people do, of Nuremberg.
Right. It's the dark part of the collective, for sure.
Hasn't happened yet, but it's definitely...
Right.
But I don't think a cat would be like that. You could vacillate between 3 years old and 80 years old when you look at these things. You really do. You're sort of like, well, it is a cat. Cats are okay. You hear about people, you know, I take pride in the fact that I like them so much because a lot of people are threatened by their independence. And you hear about, you know, or think the, like Hitler hated cats.
They won't toe the line, for sure.
Yeah. No, they don't toe the line and you can't control them.
Right.
But I feel like, I keep thinking about, to tell you the truth, the more I look at this is what's behind me.
Yep.
And that's another thing about limitations.
What he's looking at.
He's not looking at me. That's why he has this feeling of him waiting there. I don't know if you can see it up there.
Yeah.
But he definitely looks like he's not looking at you. He's
right.
Either looking past you. Like, that's why I thought maybe I'm at the front of a long line. Or maybe I'm looking down an alley and this is like a drunk in there, you know? But I keep thinking, like, I probably, and this is at the bottom of it too. I have gone down this hallway. There's a door that is going to require some effort to get through. Either communicating with this creature or finding a magic button, pushing some square on it, or just waiting. And my instinct is I should probably just turn around and go back. Or even worse, which is what you're talking about, limitations, that I'm destined to wait here.
Yeah.
Which is really the worst.
And you might have to deal with this one.
Well, I feel that way about my work sometimes, that I feel that way about myself, that I am deluded in thinking that I am in another place and that I am probably in the same place with everybody else. And not that I'm better than them, but I do like to think that for whatever reason in my life, I've tried to go to another place
mm-hmm.
and try to open that other door. And will not tolerate waiting and will even break through the door and bang my head against it and whatever. But that there's a chance that wherever I am is where we all are. And if it's, you're not seeing God, you're in the shadow of it, that's, you should settle for that
in
some way.
Okay.
But it's pretty brown and it's pretty.
Well, on that note of where everyone is, should we open
sure.
it up? I know I'm just doing my job, but.
Is Don Draper a cat? Or a broader question, who is...
Who's the cat?
Is Don Draper a cat?
Oh, is Don Draper a cat? Are we just defining as cats versus dogs, or is it cat
as a broader question of who is he?
Wow.
Yeah. I was going to say wow, too.
Yeah, that's a toughie. Don Draper's a man. That's the hardest thing to accept about all of it. I think he has a developed anima. He's got a lot of all kinds of people in him, but I don't think he has the confidence or knows this place or is focused enough on where he wants to eat and sleep the way a cat is. He may be a guardian of some other realm, but he's definitely missing a lot of the good stuff that cats have.
People seem to treat him like that, though, right? Like he's got this distant kind of...
Yeah. Well, he's definitely... Oh, his attachment thing? Yeah, that's pretty cat-like. But I don't know if cats ever want... I think cats seem satisfied in it, but he's definitely...
Right.
He's definitely going to eat your face if you die when there's... Like
yes. It seems to me that one interpretation could be that the shadow side of God is Earth itself, and that this could be life on Earth, and that's why it's all in earthy tones.
Wow. But it's just it's a room?
Well, it's a... To me...
I mean, if it was like...
It's a waiting room.
It's a waiting
it's
room.
A waiting that's it's a waiting room on one's way to God after death, for example.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what I'm feeling. It's like limbo. That's not a great place to be, right? It's not like you're... There are plenty of natural places on Earth where you feel the presence of God. Try your kid's bedroom if you're lucky enough to have that. Or a grassy meadow that I always dream about, some big field with, you know, like that Wyeth painting. Mm-hmm. But this feels to me like the Department of Punishment.
Some scene from Brazil or something.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Well, it really has those, it's the tile elements. Yeah. They really feel kind of official.
Well, you know, what I almost did was have the picture before this and the picture after this, which might give
what
it some
they?
Context.
Yeah,
well,
give me some context.
Well, one of the ones but just before this is a fiery snake coming up through a mountain and then exploding above it in a kind of tree of lava.
Right.
And then one after this, or a couple after this, is a beautiful egg with the world inside it. Kind of blue and luminescent, and you know, should I have given you that one?
No, now I know what's behind the door.
Yeah,
and now I know what's behind me, because that makes sense. That you come from this chaos, mm-hmm. explosion, sex, hedonism, right. sensation,
ideas,
and then you have to wait here with Jeeves. And that door opens, and there's a birth. There's the egg of the world being born.
Right.
I knew. I'm telling you that I have. There's no right answer. Obviously, that's what's so fascinating about this stuff. But don't people agree? I mean, talk about like
no. But you knew that
collective.
That was. You knew that was there, and that's.
I knew that there's. Yeah. I know that there's something good on the other side of that door.
Yeah.
That's. Just
that's
the
why
way
I had
I
to say it.
To,
yeah.
That's why I choose to believe anyway.
Yeah.
But then I had the sensation of like. I didn't know there was another one, you know? I had the sensation of, like, I guess that's what you're talking about. Maybe this is it. Maybe this is... It's very Christian to me. I wasn't raised with that there's anything good about suffering. It was that the shadow of God would be anything dark. The shadow of God to me is either a place where there's justice or awe. I don't really have any of that, like... It's foreign to me, collective or not. It's right. very foreign to me to imagine that there'd be... pain and suffering, and that there's some place in there that you're being close to something bigger because of that. To me, it's like you're...
Even in the process, the creative process, there's not pain and suffering that leads to something?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, but that's childbirth.
No, I agree.
But
yeah.
This does not feel like childbirth.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Maybe it is.
Jung thinks that if you can gather those lava parts of all those, the hedonism and ideas and everything, and then suffer the confinement and the waiting... Then on the other side, you know,
wow.
this happens in a very small cycle.
That is so strange. No, I mean strange, like it's that is what's been on my mind, and that's where I am right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm beginning the process of doing this show again. As you know, something good happening is more intimidating than just saying, like, I told you no one would pay attention. I'm just going to keep doing it. Instead of like, oh my God, they like it. What's wrong with them? How did I do that? Can I do it again? And theoretically, you are mastering something. So you have learned something, so it will be easier. And then everything that comes to you easily, you don't trust because your traditional process is throwing away everything that comes easily.
Right.
And then, so what you're talking about is literally being in limbo.
Yeah.
And it's very painful. I was thinking about this with Tiger Woods. I saw this on TV. He's going to go play in a tournament, and he is getting back together with his wife. She went to visit him at his sex rehab clinic. And I was like, what happened? Time. All this could have happened the next day. Nope. Time. Why did that take time? Did anything actually happen, or is he just in that room? Is that the person at the door to the sex rehab clinic? It's kind of strange, right?
Yeah.
And it's definitely part of the creative process, and it is completely mysterious, and no matter how many times you do it, it's a necessity, and you don't believe it. It's one of those things after it's over, you're like, well, that time it didn't happen. I'm literally having an experience right now where I keep talking to people, spilling my anxiety all over them about my process, and I'm getting sick of hearing them saying, like, you do this every year. You just said this. You just said that. It's word for word. I'm going to tape you one of these times. I'm going to write it down. I'm like, do, because I don't believe you, because I've never been this lost before. But that feels like a panic to me, and this is, like, the worst of it. This is the part where you're actually alone with it.
Yeah.
This is the part. This is scarier to me than being at the panic is what I create to avoid living in that room.
Yeah.
You know, turn to that guy and say, can I smoke in here?
The thing that's so astonishing about Mad Men is that you do really look through into someone's psyche, and you really do show so much of the dark side. And the other thing is the time travel aspect of it.
Right.
So I kept seeing that as going through and really seeing the X-ray in the shadowy side of human beings, but also the time travel. How did you get into that era so completely?
You know what? There was a philosophical attitude about it. It requires a tremendous amount of effort to take away human beings' ability to abstract. And one of the biggest arguments we had at the beginning that I had with the director who shot the pilot was that he wanted to do in black and white. And I was like, I'm not going to do it. That's why that ceiling is in there. That's why I know people think it's symbolic, but in the pilot, there's a moment where my hero, who, by the way, comes in and takes a nap during his creative crisis 15 minutes into the pilot. Sleep is heroic. He lays down and looks up at this light fixture, and there's a fly in there walking around. And I know people sort of said, oh, you know, he's trapped in the thing like the fly because he can't solve his problem. And that had never occurred to me. I wanted to show that that fly is not period. There are still flies trapped in the light, and it was an attempt to cross that barrier of whatever we associate with the entertainment. And then the other thing is just shining a lens on debris and trash and having the people speak in a more naturalistic way, and even though it's a little stilted, it's not stilted, it's trying to be naturalistic. They happen to be the smartest, funniest people in the whole world. Certainly the smartest, funny people who ever got in your advertising. But that's what all the people in advertising are like, I wish I worked with those guys. But we all wish, you know, it's the same in my profession. But I feel like the time travel part of it was a concentrated effort to include all the different periods, just to take stock of reality. We use reality, and we have recordings of these things, and they may not be accurate, but we take stock of them. And then the other part that I thought would have nothing to do with time travel was focus my attention on this tiny shit, which is the most important stuff in my life, and I think in anybody's life. You know, we made a season out of the experience of something as small as somebody being slighted. The revelation of Don's identity, which is dramatic because it's so big, is greeted with who cares? Because that's reality. And I always try to keep things within that scope. And I think that is the part where you think like, oh, I don't even know what year it is or what time it is. I guess I'm going back to that time. I guess how they behave. Certain things are really different, thank God, and also boo-hoo. Some of it's sad and some of it's amazing.
And that's the change part.
That's the change part.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming out again. It's great. Great to have you.